Welcome to the Camden Nazarene Podcast. Camden Nazarene is an established church with a fresh vision located at 2276 Jefferson Davis Highway in Camden, South Carolina. We gather for worship each Sunday at 10:40 a.m., and you're invited to be our guest this Sunday.
Luke chapter 7, I'm going to do it a little bit differently. Typically, I'll read the text as a whole at the very beginning of the sermon, but we're going to take a big chunk here, so we're just going to walk through it together. But Luke chapter 7, and we'll begin with verse 11 here in a moment. But last week, we were challenged to have a bold faith, a bold faith like the centurion who reached out to Jesus at his time of need without even laying eyes on Jesus. He had simply heard of Jesus, and he reached out to him. The centurion's servant had become sick, and the centurion loved his servant, cared for him. And so when he became sick, he realized he had a need, and he had just simply heard of this man from Nazareth. He had simply just heard of this one who was the Messiah, who was healing and doing all of these things, casting out demons and teaching in the synagogues and doing all of these powerful things. He heard about it, and he sent some folks to go find Jesus. And he knew that Jesus could heal him wherever Jesus was. He knew that Jesus didn't even have to come to his house to see his servant. So last week, we were challenged to have that bold type of faith. We were also challenged to reach for a faith that would move us closer to the heart of God. Faith that would give us the courage to pray a prayer like this. A prayer that says, Lord, would you use this situation to bring you glory? Now, that's a bold prayer, depending on what your situation is. You may be facing sickness. You may be facing financial hardship. I don't know what you're facing, but a bold faith says, Lord, would you just use this situation in a mighty way? Would you use this situation in a mighty way to bring you glory? And this week, I want us to expand upon this thought some more. I believe when we talk about faith, if we're honest, we talk about faith, sometimes we may leave some questions unanswered. Or to be a little more real, maybe we don't even leave the questions on the table unanswered because we haven't even laid the questions on the table because we're a little fearful to even ask some questions about faith. Questions like, how come God doesn't always move in the same way and in every situation? Questions like, if he moved and healed in this situation, why didn't he do the same with this person? And I believe those are great questions that we as believers we struggle with, because we've all seen people who are sick, we've all seen people who have gone through some sort of suffering, and we pray for them, and for not always is the outcome the way that we were praying, or not always is the outcome the way that we would have had it planned. But even in those moments, Lord, how do we have the faith to hold on? How do we wrap our minds around those types of situations? And I believe those are good questions. I don't think asking those types of questions make you any less Christian. I think you guys can agree with this. I hope you can. But please know that as a Christian, it's okay to wrestle with stuff. It's okay to try to wrap your mind around certain things. I mean, it was one of the, we even in the Gospels, one came to Jesus and Jesus said, "Do you believe?" And he responded with, "I believe. Help my unbelief." You know, it's like I believe, but I still find it unbelievable. So we have all through the biblical story, there are these moments of the people of God wrestling with tough questions. And so before we dive into this question, I think we need to dive into questions like, what is our motivation and what is our identity as believers? What's our motivation to walk this Christian journey? Who are we in Christ? I think those are questions that are worth diving into before we can even answer the first question that I posed to you. Motivation, there's a lot that goes into that. This last couple days I spent up in Nashville, Tennessee with the teens who are up there for Top Nazarene Talent. 1,600 students from all over the Southeast, Nazarene Southeast students, converged to participate in all sorts of things, Bible quizzing, ultimate frisbee, singing, art, all kind of, you name it, if you can do it, there's probably a competition for you. There's even a math test, all right? You know, I told this one guy, we actually have one youth pastor in the district. He actually teaches math up in Great Falls. He's the youth pastor at Chester. And I said, hey, man, are you going to coach the math team? You know, like, yes, great quotient. Keep it going, you know. And he was surprised I knew the term quotient. And, you know, and don't really ask me to know what that, I just know that's a word. All right, don't even ask me kind of what that is. But I witnessed 1,600 or so teens. Man, they had some motivation. Man, they went up there, and if they were Bible quizzing, they were motivated for the prize. By the way, our South Carolina district quiz team is the championship first place team in all of the Southeast. All right? How about that? All of the Southeast. I mean, it came down to a challenge, and then another question. It came down to a challenge on question 19. Yeah, so we actually got it wrong, and then we challenged it, and they overturned it. And then we, on the last question, I mean, it was, whew. You talk about March Madness has nothing on Bible quizzing, y'all. I'm telling you. Has nothing on Bible quizzing. But these kids, man, I saw their motivation, and the whole point of the whole weekend was for them to be motivated to win, but them to also to be reminded that their identity is rooted in who God has made them to be. The theme for that event is from God for God. So we receive these gifts from God, and they come to us in all various types of ways, and we want to use them for God. And so I saw that on display this week. And so this morning I want us to talk about what is our motivation? What is our identity as believers? And so our journey through Luke brings us to two narratives that I believe when you compare them, when you put them side by side, it helps us answer some questions about faith. It helps us answer questions about identity, about what our motivation is as believers. Our narrative here is a healing narrative that really has a great ending. The first one has a really great ending. The other narrative that we'll dive into is going to help us see that the journey of faith doesn't always lead us down the easy path. Jesus, he comes to this town called Nain. He had been in Capernaum, where he had healed the centurion's servant and who was about to die, if you remember that. Now he comes across this funeral procession in the town of Nain. Nain would have been about 21 miles or so southeast of Capernaum. So, man, Jesus and his entourage, man, they're rolling. They're moving. They're making some good ground. Because if you look at the text, he heals the centurion. And then verse 11, the gospel writer says, soon afterward, Jesus went to Nain. So I read that as, man, he's making some tracks. If he's already 21 miles south of where he was. So he comes into this town. He sees this funeral procession taking place. And look at Scripture, verses 11 through 13. It'll be on the screen. It says, soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain. His disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. Now, that's important for you to realize in this text. Because in this male-dominated culture that the Bible is written in this context in which the Bible is written in, this poor woman now has nothing. If she was poor when she had a husband, she's desolate now, because if she doesn't have a husband, doesn't have a son, she can't own a property. I mean, it's just a bad day for her. So a large crowd is coming through, says, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, I love that the gospel writer Luke uses the word Lord. Doesn't say Jesus, doesn't say Son of Man, doesn't say Son of God. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her and said, don't cry. And as we'll see throughout the Gospels, we see here that Jesus is motivated. If you'll talk about motivation, look here. Jesus is motivated by love and compassion. This funeral procession and the grieving mother has caught the attention of Jesus, and she doesn't even know it. Last week, the centurion was aware of his need, and he reached out. This poor woman is not even aware that anything can be done, and yet Jesus reaches out. Jesus has compassion upon her. Man, that really gives us some encouragement. I don't know what you're facing, don't know what you're going through. You may not even know how to get through it, but what I see is a Lord who loves us so much, who ministers to us, who is looking upon us even when we don't even realize it, even when we don't even realize that we might even need something. Look at verses 14 and 15. Then he went up and he touched the bier, or the casket they were carrying him on. And the bearer stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. I mean, just picture this scene, if you will. Just think if there's a Powers funeral home procession that's going through Kershaw County, and someone says, "Stop the hearse, stop, 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 stop." And place your hand on them. I mean, I'm trying to put it in context. This is what a bier was, okay? This was a procession that was going through town. Now, this would catch some people's attention, would it not? That's good stuff. And he stops it, and he says, "Get up." The crowd here that's gathered around, Luke calls it a crowd. He's way out in the countryside. Very, very rare could have been more than maybe 100 people, but Luke calls it a crowd because of where they are. Plus, if it had been a thousands, the Romans would have been like, "Hey, all these Galileans are assembling together. Let's go take care of them." They would have quenched it a little bit quicker than they did. So these folks are around, and they see all this is going on, and they get a glimpse. They get a glimpse of an Old Testament shadow. They get a glimpse of an Old Testament picture, because what they are reminded of is Elijah. Elijah, who had compassion on the widow there at Zarephath and raised her son up to life again. And so here, Jesus kind of gives us a picture of the fulfillment of everything that is in the Old Covenant, a fulfillment of everything that God had done up to that point. Jesus, once again, is stepping into that role, and he's taking it even a step further. And so I believe here, that's also a picture of Elijah here. Ultimately, Luke, he's giving us a glimpse of the Jesus who is the Messiah. Remember, this is what Luke is all about. Luke is all about identifying Jesus as the Messiah, and that this Messiah has come for everyone. Not just the Jews, not just these people, but salvation is here for everyone. To be a light to the Gentiles. We talked about that last week. How when Jesus was presented there on the steps of the temple, there with Simeon, there in Luke chapter 2. Simeon said, "Here is a light to all the people, a light to even to the Gentiles." And so here, Luke gives us this glimpse of a Jesus who is the Messiah. So that's a good story, right? That's got a great ending. Somebody was in need. It was a really bad situation. Jesus comes rolling by. Son pops up, says, "Hey, y'all, what's going on? What y'all doing?" "Well, we were trying to have your funeral, but I guess we'll put that off." And he says, "That's good. Sounds great." Right? Which I've always wondered, those who were raised from the dead in the Bible, you know, Lazarus, this guy. Like, so then the guy lived with this anxiety, maybe, like, because they knew what it was to die to once. Like knew what it felt like to die the first time. And so they're like, "Well, I guess I'm going to die again at some point, you know, or I don't know. I don't know what was going on, but just crazy things I think about when I read the Bible. I'm sorry. So let's put a pause on that narrative, and let's shift gears a bit. Because the amount of all the Messiah work that Jesus is doing, we see that John the Baptist now comes back on the scene. Well, not himself, but his followers come back on the scene. Look at verse 18. John's disciples told him all about these things. So John's disciples maybe are among the crowd here. They've seen some other things. They see all this going on, and they go back to John. So John's back on the scene. We haven't seen John since Luke chapter 3 when he was baptizing there in the river and he baptized Jesus. But at this point, John is now in prison. That's why John couldn't see it for himself. He had to see his followers had to go back and report back to him because he is in prison. He was thrown in prison because he called Herod out on his sinful choices. Now, this is kind of a, you know, if CBS wanted a new storyline for their soap opera, I've got them one, all right? I got one for them, I got many of them in the Bible. But we're Nazarenes, and you don't know what the soap opera is, do you? So don't even worry about it. So this isn't the same Herod. This isn't the same Herod that's referenced in Jesus' birth. This is a different Herod. He just holds a title. This is actually his son. So the one that was there at Jesus' birth, now this is his son. And so his son had actually fallen in love with his brother's wife. I don't recommend that. Don't recommend that. You know, take anything from me today, you walk here saying, do not fall in love with my brother's wife, or any other man's wife for that matter, okay? So you got an application. He falls in love with his brother's wife, and John says, hey man, you can't do that. That's not cool. And Herod says, oh, you want to watch me? And he throws him in jail. So John finds himself in jail. And this is his response. So he's in jail, and look at verse 19. He sent them to the Lord and asked, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? So John's followers had gone back to John and told him all the things that Jesus had done. They told him about the widow's son being raised from the dead. And really, I kind of find John's response a little bit interesting. Because he sends them to ask if Jesus is the one who is to come, or should they expect someone else? And really, so is John doubting? We could draw that conclusion, and every other preacher, many preachers before me would certainly draw that conclusion. I think there is some of that there, because remember, John does indeed find himself in prison. So it could be John's thinking, hey, if you can raise the dead, I think you can maybe figure out how to get me out of jail. There could be that. However, I think if you look at what John's ministry has been about, I think that can help us unpack this a little bit more. So think about what John has been doing up to this point. All of John's life has been preparing for Jesus. He's been ramping people up. He's been the opening act, if you will, for Jesus. Even in utero, even in the womb, John has been the pre-show for Jesus. I mean, Scripture says that John leapt in his mother's womb when Mary shows up and says, hey, I'm with child. John is out in the desert. This is Jesus' cousin, don't forget. He's out in the desert. He's preparing the way for Jesus. He's preaching a message of redemption. He's preaching a message of, hey, judgment is coming. He's been preaching a pretty strong message. It's not going to be on the screen, but remember, John has made comments like this in Luke 3, verse 9. The axe is already at the root of the trees, and every tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. He's made statements like Jesus will baptize with Holy Spirit and fire. He says things like his winnowing fork is in the hand to clear the threshing floor and to gather the wheat into his barn, but he will burn up the chaff in the unquenchable fire. So John, man, he's had a pretty strong message. He's like, man, this person that I'm preparing for, this person who's coming on the scene, man, it's about to get real. I hope you guys are ready. Judgment's coming, fire's coming, you guys better all straighten up. And so because of that, I draw this conclusion that I don't know if John is doubting as much as he is a little confused on the identity of Jesus as the Messiah. Because his followers come back to John and say, hey, John, man, this guy, he's like raising the dead, healing the sick. And John's like, wait a minute. I thought the axe was supposed to be the tree. I thought judgment was coming. I thought we was bringing fire down. Go ask him if he's the one, or should I expect someone else? We don't know much about John other than, I mean, I would imagine he's a guy that gets fired up a lot and gets fired. I mean, he's like, let's go, let's do it. Jesus is always a little more stoic, right? I believe that John had different expectations from Jesus. I believe the identity of who Jesus is different from what John had in mind. So Jesus responds. Look at verses 21 through 23. Now, I love this. I don't know if it's perfect timing or what. So they ask, hey, are you the one? And Jesus is like, hold on, let me cure some people real quick. And then I'll answer your question. You know? At the very time, Jesus cured many who had disease, sickness, and evil spirits, and gave sight to many who were blind. All right, so you get this picture, right? They've asked, hey, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Hold on, let me heal the blind guy, and we'll talk about that. At the very time, I'm sorry, Justin, I'm messing you up. So he replied to his messengers, go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk. Those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Now, again, I don't think that Jesus is even being sarcastic here. I think Jesus realizes, and again, this is just kind of my sanctified imagination trying to look at this text from a different way. Because it very well could have been John was doubting because he is in prison. But at the same time, I do believe, and this would be consistent with what we see in the gospel, there is a conflict here of what John thinks the Messiah should be doing. John's like, hey, Isaiah talked about axe, trees, judgment, fire. When are you going to do that? And Jesus says, he responds with a glimpse of Isaiah 35 and a glimpse of Isaiah 61 and says, the Messiah also gives sight to the blind, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, and the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to him. So it's like Jesus is saying, John, just calm down, man. I am doing the Messiah's work because I am the Messiah. Now I'm going to stretch here a little bit. You're like, I thought you've already been doing that. So Jesus responds with glimpses of Isaiah 61 and Isaiah 35. And there's a piece, especially in Isaiah 60 or 61, there's a piece that is left off here. So he says, good news is proclaimed to the poor. If you're in Isaiah 60, it goes on to say, and the prisons are open and the captives are set free. And that's most likely a text for maybe a glimpse of the second coming of Christ, maybe. But I think it's interesting that Jesus stops there. Knowing that John's in prison, he kind of stops there, and instead he says this. He says this. Look at verse 23. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, John, I need you to hold on. John, I just need you to hold to the faith. I just need you to hold on. I know that you'd rather be out of prison, but I just need you to hold on. I need you to see the bigger picture of what's happening here. And we're getting close to the end, I promise. But I want you to see this, and this may not be as encouraging, because if you've been around the church, if you know the story, you know that John's story does not end as well as the widow's story. John is still in prison. Herod has run off with Herodias, his brother's wife. And Herodias has a daughter who's having a birthday party. And he says, hey, I'll give you anything you want. And this sick, demented girl says, hey, I know what I want for my birthday. I want John the Baptist's head. It's right there. And unfortunately, that's how John's story ends, y'all. And I think it leaves us with questions of faith, like, why does God move in this way in this situation and move in this way in this situation? Why did this person have the same exact sickness and they were touched, and this person wasn't touched. We prayed the same, and I just don't understand. And I think that we have to be reminded, what is our motivation for being Christ followers? In order to wrap our minds around these tough questions of faith, what is our motivation for being Christ followers? Because we don't have all the answers. We do not have all the answers of life when it comes to dealing with suffering. This is what I know. We live in a broken world. We live in a world that has sin. Sin has entered the world, and as a result, we have sickness, we have brokenness, we have disappointment in this world that we live in. But this is what we have to remember. In John's case, and in the widow's case, Jesus is still the Messiah. He is still the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. And we serve a God who is motivated by love. Now, we do serve a powerful God that raises widow's son from the dead. I get that. But we also serve a God who walks with us through the fires of life. We also serve a God who walks with us in the dungeons, in the prisons, when we've been falsely accused like John has. We serve a God who also walks with us in that brokenness, in that sinfulness that we have to deal with in this life. I don't have all the answers as to why or how God chooses to use His power. But we have to remember that the ultimate use of God's power was when He defeated hell, sin, and the grave. When He arose on that third day and lives again, that was the ultimate use of His power, folks. The ultimate use of His power was His Son dying on a cross for our sin, for our shame, and being risen again on the third day. That is the ultimate use of God's power. And because of that, you and I can be healed from this sickness called salvation. Because of that, you and I can have new life. You and I can have hope. You and I can walk through the tough things of life. We can share in the joys of life together, but we can also share in the hardships of life. You see, I believe in the same way that Jesus looked on that widow with compassion, so God looked upon sinful humanity with compassion and sent His Son for us. Even when we found ourselves going down a road that we didn't expect, God is indeed with us. So I pray that our motivation for loving and serving Jesus isn't because we see Him as some genie who gives us our wishes. I hope our motivation is simply because while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. If you want a motivation to walk this Christian journey, if you want a motivation to live for Him, then your motivation is that without Christ, you deserve hell, you deserve death. But while we were yet still sinners, Christ died for us. And even through the tough questions of life, even through the asking why, God still loves us. And He looks upon us with compassion. I hope our motivation is to be the embodiment of Christ to the world around us. That may mean being the embodiment of Christ even in the midst of sickness. Being a testimony, being a story, being a light, being this embodiment of Christ's love and His faithfulness even through sickness, even through death. You know, as someone, I mentioned this last week, and as someone who has experienced a sudden loss of a parent, you know, it's easy to to drop into the whys of life. It's easy to ask all the tough questions, but like I said last week, those are crossroad moments in which you can either run from God or you can run to God. And I pray that we run to God and say, God, would you help me? Help me be the embodiment of your word. Help me be the embodiment of your life. Help me be the embodiment of Christ in this situation. Lord, to use this for your glory. Because this is what Christ says to us. Look at verse 23 again. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. Basically, blessed is the one who stays strong. Blessed is the one who is faithful to the end. Blessed is the one who can ask God why, but yet keep on moving forward in faith. Blessed is the one who says, I don't understand why these jobs are not calling me back. Blessed is the one who says, I don't understand why I'm in this place of life. Blessed is the one who says, I don't understand why I'm battling this addiction, but yet through all of that, believes and holds true and holds fast that God is with them and he's going to see them through. We serve a faithful God. I believe we serve the same God that raised the widow's son is the same God who responded to John the Baptist while he was in prison the way that he did. God didn't change there. I can't unpack all of those details. But in all that, it was God who was faithful. And he's always been faithful. We're going to end this way. We're going to sing an old hymn of the church that just simply says, Lord, great is thy faithfulness. Through all the seasons of life, whatever's going to come, Lord, that you indeed are faithful. And I pray today that you understand that Your motivation for being a Christ follower has nothing really to do with all the goodies that you might get from God. But it has everything to do with you being a new creation. Your motivation for serving and following the Lord is because he has made you a new creation. He has transformed your life. And even when you're walking through the dark moments of time, the dark moments of life, you can walk knowing that he is with you and he is faithful. Even when the outcome is not what we would have had, we know that he is still good and he's moving us through and he is leading us. He's wanting to redeem whatever situation we find ourselves in because he indeed is a faithful God. Would you stand with us and we're going to sing this song. The altars are always open. If you want to come and you want to pray, perhaps you're at a point in your life where you just feel like you need more faith. You feel like that things are just not going the way that you would have them to be. Would you just come and you can pray and say, Lord, would you fill me up with faith? Fill me up with to be able to be your embodiment of your spirit even through this tough situation. Let's sing together.
Thank you for visiting CamdenFirstChurch.org.